Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Remix Melbourne. Please welcome to the stage Microsoft Australia's Michael Kadai and Shane Morris.
Good morning, everyone. Well, when we wrapped up Remix here in Melbourne last year, we said that we wanted to dedicate the keynote this year to all the awesome work that Australians are doing in Silverlight, in WPF, in Windows Live, and before we go any further, I should stop and congratulate yourselves and your colleagues on all the awesome work we just saw in the Australian Remix Highlights video.
Absolutely.
So welcome to Remix. So welcome to the beautiful Melbourne Town Hall. Come inside a wedding cake. I've gone completely blank.
Have you? That's good, because we're excited to have you here.
Right, so, thank you. Last year, we sold out Remix in Melbourne. This year, we took it on the road. We had an awesome dress rehearsal in Sydney on Tuesday, ready for the main event here today. Finn set us a target of more than doubling the number of people attending Remix in Australia this year, and we have more than done that. In fact, Remix is sold out. Not a phrase we usually like to use in relation to Microsoft. But awesome for our second Remix.
Yeah, totally. So welcome again. You know I'm Michael, and you know that's Shane by now, hopefully. I want to share an observation that I had during rehearsals yesterday and during the rehearsal in Sydney, is that most of the speakers today are Aussies, which means there's heaps of local knowledge. These guys are experts in their fields. So I reckon you guys should grab them, hug them, embrace them, pick their brains, and learn as much as you can from them. They'll be around to ask the experts area up the side there throughout the day. But I reckon it's really cool because you guys can come to a lot of Microsoft events and find a lot of Americans. It's cool to see a lot of Aussies with local talent. Secondly, you're going to see stuff that got announced recently that not many people have seen before at all. Some of it's not even public yet. Some of it will be public soon. You're going to get a deep, good look at some of the innovative stuff some really big brand Aussies have done. And the third thing that I noticed as going through the registrations, particularly for Melbourne, is there's a really good mix of creatives and technical people, which is, I reckon, awesome.
So we're going to have to do the obligatory show of hands.
If you dare, my friend, if you dare.
So my creative peeps, don't let me down right now. So show of hands if you're creative, user experience, design, animator, page layout, AV crew, if you could help me out.
Microsoft.
Hands up. Thank you very much. It's awesome to see all our new designer friends here. Designers are still a new audience for Microsoft. We appreciate you coming along, and we've got some great stuff to show you today in the creative track.
I reckon it's kind of cute that he wants to do a show of hands. Can I see developer hands?
Yeah, just wave your pocket protectors in the air.
Let's get the designers quick.
So that's what Remix is all about, as you probably know by now, bringing together the right mix of creative, technical and business considerations, collaborating on awesome new products and services, and drawing inspiration from others. And it's on that note that we've invited our keynote speaker today.
May I have a clicker, please? Thank you. I don't want to take up too much of our keynote speaker's time because he kicked ass in Sydney and he promised me he's going to kick even more ass in Melbourne. Mark Pesci. Let me press next. Mark Pesci. You all know Mark Pesci. He is, first and foremost, a futurist. He's an inventor. If you guys know anything about VRML, if you remember VR, do you remember VRML?
Hey,
you're looking at the man who made that happen. He's a panelist on the New Inventors. He's an author, he's a published author. He's actually written books on Microsoft Direct Show and some of the early DirectX stuff. Mark, as a futurist, looks at the now and tries to envision what's happening in the future by connecting it to the now. I'm not going to take up any of his time. Mark Pesci, come up, dude.
Alrighty, folks. Let's start off with a message from the future.
Local news of the week. At midnight Saturday, the telephones in this city will be changed to dial service, and all telephone numbers will be changed. Late this week, new directories will be delivered. Here are a few important suggestions for the use of your dial telephone. Before calling any number, first secure the number from your new directory. Then remove the receiver and listen for the dial tone. It sounds like this. That tone indicates everything is ready for your call. With the receiver off the hook, dial the desired number. For example, suppose you want to dial 23650. Dial each numeral in this manner, pulling the dial around to the finger stop each time. Be sure to allow the dial to freely return to its normal position. And this is the ringing signal. If the line is busy, you'll hear this busy signal. Until Saturday midnight, please use your present directory and make your calls in the usual manner.
Good morning, everyone. So today I'm really going to talk about how the way we're dialing each other up has been changing so massively and so quickly and so completely. And so let me start off by talking about what happened last Monday. So as you know, at 2:28 p.m. of Chinese local time, there was a massive earthquake. And in places, the ground trembled for as long as 3 minutes, and it was felt all over Asia, and in particular, it was felt all over China. Now, the Chinese, in March of this year, passed the Americans with the largest online population. There's over 220 million Chinese who are online, basically, on a daily basis. And so when the shaking had stopped, if they still had power and they still had an internet connection, they went online, basically, to ask people, did you feel that? Did you feel that? Did you feel that? Because, of course, that's the completely normal reaction when that happens. Now, we all do all sorts of things online. We do some very prosaic things. So we go online and maybe check the banking or make a flight reservation. We do things for our coworkers. We answer their queries. We ask them questions. We help them do reports. And the interesting thing is that we're also using the internet to extend and to deepen our social life. Now, it wasn't supposed to be like that. This is what the internet was supposed to turn us into. Basically the equivalent of a nerdy uni dropout who's lying around in the parents' basement and abandoning contact with the cruel world. And in reality, something very, very different is taking place because we're reaching out through the wire and we're connecting. We're connecting first to our families and then to our friends and then to our colleagues. And just now we're starting to connect and actually establish relationships with people that we've never met and probably will never meet. And we touch all of these people with acts of communication. With our friends, we can send them, you know, a favorite joke. With our family, we send them loves and kisses. And with our colleagues, we might send them a link to a report. Now, what are we doing with everyone else? Well, we'll come to that. But every time we reach out, every time we connect, every time we communicate, we actually strengthen the bond between each of us. And that's not a new thing. It's not even a particularly human thing, because gorillas and chimpanzees do it as well. And it's a basic part of our biology, and it's something that we know how to do from basically the moment we're born. We've known how to do it for 11 million years. And what we do is we use these moments of connection to share something that we stumbled upon, or something that we found that's really interesting, or something that we really believe. Sharing makes the world go round. But all of a sudden, we've gotten really, really good at sharing. So you consider this. I've been in Australia for just over 4.5 years. And all of these new things have happened since I've been here. You have YouTube now, which allows you to share a video with absolutely everyone else on the planet. You have Flickr, which allows you to do the same thing with photos. And now, just now, you have Twitter. Now, how many of you use Twitter? You're doing better than Sydney, all right? But this is still only about 10 or 15% of the room. The rest of you, this is your warning call. It's time to sign up for Twitter. All right, so what's Twitter? Twitter is a social message service. All right, I sign up for Twitter and I have a number of people who then decide that they want to get any messages that I post. The messages are 140 characters long. Now, when I actually did this in Sydney, I had about 450 followers. As of this morning, I have about 525 followers, in part because I've been pimping Twitter a lot in public. So many of these people who follow me and whom I follow in return, they're known to be either in the flesh or they're known to be by reputation. But other people follow me just because they may be interested in something that I have to say. Now, I have to admit, a lot of the chatter on Twitter is completely inane. It's like the world's sort of weirdest cocktail party that never shuts down because it's global, all right? But some of what they have to say is incredibly vital and incredibly important. For example, I have a fellow who follows me and whom I follow named Dedrick Lam. Dedrick lives in Shanghai. And on last Monday, when the shaking stopped, well, he's like, I think we just had an earthquake. He goes on Twitter and he starts to talk around. Other people in Shanghai says, yeah, I felt that. Other people in Beijing say, yeah, I felt that. And all of a sudden, it's pretty clear that there's been an earthquake that was felt all around China, but no one's heard anything from Sichuan, and there are Twitterers in Sichuan. Sichuan has gone dark. So already, within a minute or two of the shaking stopping, the Twitterers have a really, really good idea of what's happened and where it's happened. And this means that Twitter is now functioning as a human-based early warning system, because we're connected together by so many different ways that when part of that human network drops out, we can sense it immediately. And this was known on Twitter, and I actually checked this before I left the house last Monday night. There was all this stuff about it. I couldn't find anything on the BBC or CNN or anywhere else or New York Times online because it hadn't been reported. It hadn't hit the AP wire. But the Twittersphere already knew about it. I went out that evening to some of my friends who have toured China, who know China well. I said, have you heard about the Chinese earthquake? They said, what earthquake? They hadn't actually heard about it yet. Now, by the time I got back to my flat a couple of hours later on Monday evening, the Twittersphere was completely alive with all this chatter, much of it coming from China, about what was going on. And people were now forwarding links through Twitter. They were sending newspaper articles. They were sending videos. They were sending photos from the front line of the rescue effort. And on Tuesday, Dedrick Lam essentially became a one-man clearinghouse and posted link after link after link. And essentially what happened was it was easier in the first 24 to 48 hours to find out what was going on in China via Twitter, because you just needed one person in one place with one link to get into the human network, and then it would go wide everywhere. And so for that first 48 hours, as BBC and CNN and the New York Times are trying to get reporters into a place where you couldn't get anyone because all the bridges had collapsed, there was no way. You actually had a really good sense of what was going on everywhere. You got a sense of the ground truth. And so you got these amazing stories, and then you got some stories that tore your heart. Now, if you're sensitive, I want you to turn away from this photo, because this photo is a very, very sad photo. But again, it all came through, and so you got the complete picture of what was going on in China. All right, you can look back at the screen now. So our ability to touch or to be touched by someone else in matters either very trivial or in life and death have grown so completely and so quickly and so suddenly that we're now not just connected, we're hyper-connected, because it's coming in from everywhere, and it's coming in and going broad from a single individual to the entire planet nearly instantaneously. So the social message service, Twitter, and things like Twitter, and there will be a lot of things like Twitter, they're not just a fun way to while away the time. They're a great way to stay informed, but they're also the way we're going to be doing business in the 21st century. So, let's take a look at how that plays out. All right, so the first weekend of April, this gentleman, Michael Arrington, who runs a blog called TechCrunch, which is probably read by a number of people in this audience, he was at home and he had his internet provider, which is Comcast, he gets a cable modem, it went out, and he kept on calling Comcast to find out what was going on. And every time he called Comcast, they said, oh yes, we're aware of the outage, and then they would give him a different reason why the outage had happened. And after 30 hours, he'd had enough. And so he snuck onto his neighbor's Wi-Fi, and he sent out a tweet. You can read it at the top of the list. He'd had enough. Now, Michael Arrington has 17,000 followers on Twitter. And they're probably people who read TechCrunch. They're people who are going to be very plugged into what's going on in technology. So Arrington posts this to Twitter in his complete sort of exasperation. And 20 minutes later, his phone rings. And it's an account executive from Comcast saying, "Hi, we've heard about your problem. How can we get this fixed?" And in the course of that conversation, Arrington learns that, in fact, this Comcast dude sits there and reads the stream of Twitters and filters it against people mentioning Comcast so he can nip problems in the bud. Now, although Arrington is big and powerful, you don't have to be big and powerful for this to happen. Josh Lowenson, a nobody, a self-professed internet nobody, was having a problem installing some software that came along with his Comcast cable modem, and again got upset and tweeted about it, and again, 20 minutes later, gets a call from Comcast, problem solved. And then he writes essentially this long and loving blog post about what is considered to be America's number one hated company, because it's America's biggest cable company, and Americans have a very, very contentious relationship with the cable company, all right? You can't pay for this kind of PR. This kind of PR is gold. And yeah, it's coming from a member of the community because someone was listening at the right place at the right time to help someone with their grievance, all right? This makes Twitter and all these social networking services extremely powerful and extremely potent weapons. But a weapon can be turned two ways. Now, this is my friend Gregory. And Gregory is a consultant in the United States. Now, you know the truth of consultants, because I do a bit of consulting work. Often you hire a consultant when you want to tell the managing director something and you don't want it to come out of your own mouth because you don't have the cojones for it. All right? I know this because I talk to managing directors, I talk to vice chancellors, and I tell them what's going on. Their staff knows what's going on, but someone's got to break the news. Well, and we also know that there are some managing directors who like to shoot the messenger, which is why I get hired, because if you shoot me, I go away. It doesn't matter. But that's what happened to Gregory last week. You know, he had a successful presentation to this managing director of this small internet company. And then the managing director basically went bananas and peppered him with insults and accusations. "You're trying to steal money from our company. This stuff is all crap. What are you talking about?" And so as soon as... And he actually sent a tweet out saying, "My God, that went really bad. I can't believe she acted this way. This is just unbelievable." And I got that tweet because I'm one of Gregory's non-followers, and I followed up with it, and I got the whole story. And when I heard about this woman's bad behavior, I had a real penny drop moment, because Gregory just got onto Twitter. He wasn't using it very much, but two of the people he's connected to, myself and Raven Zachary, have a lot of followers. That's just 100 of my followers and how they're connected together. Raven has about 700 followers and they're connected together. And I realize both Raven and I are well-known people. We're trusted in technology circles because we tend to give people good advice. And we realized that if we worked our own hyperconnections, we could bring that company to its knees. Just with a word. All we had to do was to tell people in our technology circles how this person has behaved. And do you think that managing director would be able to hire a qualified technology person again? All right. I realized that I had the power in my hands to trigger the nuclear option. That the MD would pay the full price for her stupidity. All I had to do was say a word and it would all be over in a few minutes. And I'm calling that instant karma. Now, all of this means that we need new tools. We need new tools that you folks have to create, because we're going to need them to be able to read the collective mind of the internet so you folks can find out in real time what's going on, what's being said, and why it's being said. Everyone needs this, but the big commercial firms need this the most of all, because customers can now organize themselves against you at the press of a button, all right? Rumors can destroy markets inside of an afternoon, and that behavior can no longer be covered up. Now, that's more than just a warning call, because this is an opportunity. The techniques of social sharing that we're all using when we leave the cubicle farm, those are the technologies we actually need to bring into the corporation. If you're lucky at work, you have email. And if you're very lucky, you have instant messaging. But give the corporate employees a social messaging tool, something that they'll just sort of waste their time with, something that they can use to collectively gripe or collaborate. That's beyond the pale. That's too much freedom. In fact, that gives the employees too much ability to self-organize against corporate stupidity. as if sharing and as if building esprit de corps were really a waste of time. Well, there's a disconnect between what's going on in our lives and the lives that we're living inside of our companies. And right now, inside of the corporate cubicle, we're immune from the fact that outside those doors, things are changing so rapidly it's making us dizzy. But down on the cube farm, things are pretty much the same as they ever were. Now, the longer that goes on, the more dangerous it becomes, because the more disconnected the life inside of the organization becomes from the actual hyper-connected, hyper-communicating world that we're becoming. And that's a danger, because you stand to lose time, you stand to lose customers, you stand to lose connection with your audience. But if you build tools that allow for that sharing, you can give everyone in that organization the same ability to communicate, and you can build the collaborative abilities of your organization, all right? You can turbocharge your organization in that way. So, but you, to do this, you have to grasp the net up. Now, let's take a look at how. Okay, so the web is more than just words on a page, and it's more than just a funny video embedded in a website. The web is not about content. I know we were all taught that content is king. Content is not king. Connection is king. Now, 12 years ago, sharing meant a cute page with an animated GIF background and a really, really bad MIDI soundtrack and 4,000 digital snaps of your kitty cat. All right, you remember it, I remember it. And that still goes on today. But it's become a sideshow. It's not the main event. Sharing has evolved into something else. It's more than just a way to unburden yourself. So, in 2001, Jimmy Wales opened up his failed encyclopedia to all contributors. And he had no idea that for the next 2 years, about 500 to 2,000 people from time to time would contribute on every single topic that they could think of. And they would correct grammatical and spelling mistakes in each other's entries, and they would borrow from the 1913 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which had fallen out of copyright, but they lacked the expert knowledge to write an article themselves. Now, when I saw Wikipedia first, which was in January of 2002, it had only about 14,000 articles. And that's not bad, but that's really about the same size as a children's encyclopedia. It's not really enough. But that represented a year of basically thankless work for the Wikipedians. But somehow, even that was enough to spread the word about Wikipedia. People dropped by Wikipedia and used it, and maybe developed a relationship that was a positive experience because they actually got something they needed, and they'd be more likely to drop by again. And maybe that next time they might change a word or change some punctuation or maybe add a sentence or add a paragraph. And then maybe they'd be braver the next time and add a full paragraph and then add an article. And all the time, every time they had a satisfying experience, they used the social sharing networks of email and the web to tell their friends about it. So Wikipedia grows and grows and grows until today it has 2,300,000 articles in the English language, all right? In just half a decade, Wikipedia has become the definitive reference in the English language. Now, Wikipedia is not perfect, but neither is Britannica, all right? They're about equally accurate. But Wikipedia is available anytime through any connection on the internet. And in Wikipedia, we have the standard reference now for everyone who reads English. What's that given us? Well, if you're a student, it's given you a way to cheat on your papers because your teacher's telling you not to use Wikipedia, but we know that the kids are all using Wikipedia. Or it can settle a trivia or dispute at dinner. But if you're smart, you use the factual information in Wikipedia to make better decisions, all right? We have such a wealth of knowledge available to us now that we should think of Wikipedia as a bit of a brain that just sits right outside of our heads. If we used it constantly and consistently as a reference, we would make better decisions, because there's an old quote from Mark Twain, it's not what you don't know, it's what you know that ain't so. So for all the factual questions of our lives, we now have the answers. We simply need to put that knowledge to work. And if we leverage the knowledge and the expertise that's securely locked away in our heads, knowledge that we're now able to share with one another, we can increase our intelligence. We can consistently make better decisions. We can improve our effectiveness by making better decisions, both as individuals and as groups. And this basic innovation, this is the most important innovation of the 21st century, all right? It has enormous implications for organizations of all sorts. Organizations thrive on information, and they thrive on knowledge. Every trade, from the most physical trade to the most abstract, relies on the expertise of those who practice it. So we apprentice young people so they can grow into a trade. We send them to uni and to graduate studies. But we can now accelerate that transfer of knowledge with the technologies of sharing. Now, sometimes text is the best medium for sharing knowledge. But often, video or animations or photographs, they work far more effectively, all right? So you can go to Wikipedia to learn about the history of baking, but if you want to learn how to bake a cake, you probably want to go to YouTube. So consider the lesson of Wikipedia and think about how you might apply it to your own organizations, all right? Can you improve the effectiveness of your own organization by developing a strong knowledge pooling and knowledge sharing strategy? Because those are the challenges facing the organizations of the 21st century in both the commercial and the public sectors of the economy. Now, we have tools that allow us to improve our effectiveness, that allow you to hyper-empower your organization. First, you need to develop the tools that provide hyper-connectivity within that organization. Once you've got that hyper-connectivity, you use it to pool the knowledge and expertise resources so that everyone has access to them. In some sense, it could be just as simple as Twitter plus a wiki. Just those two pieces thrown together would create a revolution in any organization. But when you start adding rich media, when you start capturing everything that can't easily be found in text, then you start building up a reservoir of expertise which turbocharges the organization and provides a rocket ship ride into empowerment. So, today you're going to learn an awful lot about all sorts of nifty tools for all sorts of things that you can do. But consider this. You already know how to put these tools to work. You use these tools outside the Cube Farm every single day. They haven't transformed the organization, but we're just on the cusp of that. Right now, almost anything is possible with sharing, with hyper-connectivity, with hyper-empowerment. You have the tools, and your organizations desperately need you to put those tools to work for them, because they have to be transformed within a few years' time to deal with the fact that all of us, as individuals, are hyper-connected. So it's up to you. It's up to every single one of you, all 300 of you in this room today. You have to go down to the code minds, you have to go into the design work, and you have to make this revolution happen. You can lead the way. You can empower me. You can empower all of us. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Mark. I don't know about you guys, but I'm feeling hyper-empowered already. Just a reminder, our Twitter hashtag is #AURemix. And if you want to keep up to date with late-breaking news and Remix Today, you should follow Nick Hodge, so at Nick Hodge, N-I-C-K-H-O-D-G-E. And that'll be awesome as soon as Twitter comes back up.
It's back up.
Awesome, cool. So it remains for us for the rest of today to really tell you a little bit about what Microsoft has been up to over the last year in terms of products, services, tools and platforms that enable you guys to deliver on your vision. So we're going to talk a little bit about the presentation layer and Silverlight. We're going to talk IE8. We're going to talk Windows Live. We're going to see some awesome demos. I'm going to talk a little bit about my favourite tools. But we should start at the top. There's been an awful lot of buzz around Silverlight recently, new announcements, new features. And I can think of many, many people more qualified to talk about Silverlight than Michael Goddard.
Oh, look at that. You got it coming back to your show.
So let's talk about Silverlight 2. The last year, everyone was using Silverlight 1. This year, it's the day of the 2. Are you guys up to date on Silverlight 2 and when it's coming out and what it's doing and all that sort of stuff? I'm going to guess no, because that's why you're here. Yay. So Silverlight 1, if you remember, was all about media. It was by far the best thing that it did. was Liberate Your Media. Two is all about developers. Two is all about tools and platforms for you, for the developers to get their hands dirty with building rich applications. So the way we like to see it, it's about, the one was about rich media experiences, and two is about rich interactive experiences, building applications. So to give you a bit of a roadmap, we announced this at Mix, which is the big puppy of this thing. A bit of a view of the roadmap. Silverlight 1 obviously is out. Silverlight 2 is currently in beta 1, and it's got a non-commercial go-live attached to it if you want to do stuff and play with stuff today. Before the Beijing Olympics, I don't know if you guys know, the NBC website that's going to stream the Olympics in the US is going to be all written in Silverlight 2. So that entire media experience is going to be done in Silverlight 2. So we're going to be in beta 2 before then. So the Olympics is, help me out, this is sport, I have no idea. August, there we go. So by August, we'll be in beta 2. I'd say we'll be there a little bit earlier. And beta 2 will have a go-live license attached to it, which means you guys can go out and make babies with Silverlight. And after that, after the Olympics sometime, we'll post the full version of Silverlight. The other thing that we announced recently was... so you know it's on all of these browsers, and there's a Moonlight edition that's being built. If you guys, the one or two of you that do Linux, maybe? Hopefully it's just one or two of you. Is mobile. So Nokia has announced a strategic partnership with Microsoft to put the Silverlight runtime on their S60, S40, and tablet devices. We're obviously going to put it on Windows Mobile as well, so stay tuned over the next little while to learn more about what we're going to do with mobile. Today we've just announced that it's going to happen, there's a strategy going forward to deliver on mobile. But the big message about mobile is use your tools today, and they'll target the mobile as well. The other question we get asked a lot is downloads, right? So when you're building apps and you want to have some sort of guarantee that Silverlight's going to be on the runtime, on the client, you want those numbers fairly high so that the install numbers are fairly low. So what we have announced as of March is that we're doing about 1.5 million installs a day, which if you're a mathematician, you could work the rest out. But that's a pretty big number. Considering a year ago people were nervous that no one's got Silverlight and what's going to happen when they need to install it. So that problem's getting solved really quickly. So Silverlight 2, I really don't want to go into detail on Silverlight 2 because you don't want me to, because I'm really bad at pretending that I know stuff. But there are going to be some sessions today. Phil Beadle's going to do a very good dev session around Silverlight 2, and he's going to go into some of the link over XML, some of the .NET run. So the big thing about 2 is that it's .NET on the client. So you'll be able to code in C# on the client and do some of the stuff that you know that you can do in .NET, like link over XML and web service support and all that sort of stuff. Phil's going to do a nice deep session on that. There's also going to be another session right after this one. That's the creative side of Silverlight 2. So skinning and styling and all the cool stuff you can do on the creative end. The other thing that we've done in 2, and everybody unanimously applaud, is controls. So now you can actually build apps, because that was one of the big things that people struggled with in 1, right? There were no controls. So now there's a whole bunch of controls from the basic things like buttons and sliders to data-bound grids. So you'd be able to really quickly get applications up and going using controls, obviously with Visual Studio integration and Expression Suite integration. But wait, there's more. This falls into the miscellaneous category, but they're not really that miscellaneous because some of them are significant. Socket support, so you can do socket level programming, styles and templating. There's actually some really cool stuff in styles and templating, so I highly recommend you go to Jonas and Jose's session about that. Threading support, so you can farm off to threaded... to threads. Adaptive streaming is really interesting. So if you've got media streaming through and your bandwidth is dropping, what happens today is your bandwidth drops and the experience sucks. With adaptive streaming, you can control the bitrate as it comes through. So if you're finding that the bandwidth is shrinking for whatever reason, especially on mobile, you can drop the bitrate dynamically. So that there's this constant experience of the video just playing, even though the quality might differ by going up and down. And accessibility support too is another really interesting thing. Deep Zoom, who hasn't seen Deep Zoom? Oh, dudes. All right, Jose's your man. The session after this, you're going to learn all about Deep Zoom. And if you remember Sea Dragon, that stuff is now in Silverlight 2. So I reckon, especially as developers, I'm being biased in the developers and creatives, because Blend 2 is also there's a whole bunch of cool stuff around Silverlight 2 and Blend. It's now time to embrace your Silverlight, I reckon anyway. What I would like to do, though, rather than me talk about the cool stuff that people have done in Silverlight, I'd like to bring someone up who's actually done a lot of work in Silverlight. So if you don't know, the ABC has built an entire experience using Silverlight with one or two of their partners. I'd like to bring Matt up to have a chat to you and to show you the stuff that they've done. What you're about to see, so you guys are going to get a sneak preview or something. So part of it is public, part of it isn't. Matt will talk all about it. So Matt.
Thanks, Michael. So ABC Commercial is the part of the ABC that deals with consumer publishing and licensing, which is actually a lot more interesting than it sounds. But we're working on a couple of projects across our video and audio businesses at the moment. And what we needed was a media player that offered a quality viewing experience, was easy to use, and was adaptable to different website requirements. Now, the place where you're going to first see what we came up with is at the ABC shop online. Now, when you go there, you'll be able to launch a link to a preview clip, and what'll come up is the media player, which is pretty much just a video and a set of basic controls down there, which introduce themselves and then fade away. Now, you move the mouse to bring them back when you want to do something, and those controls stay with the video even when you're in full screen mode like that. And if you like what you see and you want to see more, then you have the option of going down and browsing for more content. And if you really like what you see, then you have the option of buying it. Now, clicking the purchase button will bring up all of the different product variants that are available. Now, that could be a download, as in this case, but it could also be a DVD or a CD, or even a T-shirt. Because what we've done is we've taken the ABC Shop's cart and put it into the viewing experience so that you don't need to leave your video in order to buy something. So what we're going to do is we're going to buy something, and because it's the ABC's cart, you can just use your regular ABC account. Because this is a demo, it doesn't know that I already have an account, but that's quickly fixed. I just sign myself up, and I'm all ready to go. And as you can see, that clip, the download, is down there in the shopping cart now. So what I can do is go through to the cart and put my details in. Now, this is the ABC's regular shopping cart, as I said, but it has been customized to deal with digital downloads, so that if you don't have any physical products in your cart, you just have a download, for example, then it won't ask you for delivery details or postal details or that sort of thing. So now I just come through and do the business. That's a fake credit card number, by the way. Don't try that at home. And do the legals, nice and easy. And hopefully there's money on my credit card. Yes, there is. So that download is on its way to me now. And in order to get those files onto my desktop and so that I can browse and manage them later on, there's a download manager application that installs itself on the first purchase. That's based around Contiki's peer-to-peer technology. So that's busy downloading there. I'll show you that application. There it is. And as you can see, that the file I just bought is busy downloading now. And here's one we prepared earlier. So I can play that back inside the download manager application if I want to. There it goes. It's a bit of Summer Heights High there for you. I don't have to play back the file in the download manager if I don't want to, though. The files are protected by DRM to keep the rights holders happy. But the way we set it up, you can, in fact, play it outside the download manager if you want to, and you can even copy it to another computer, like your laptop, for example, a limited number of times so that you can watch it on the go. And that is pretty much it. Now, you will see that the interface to that has the download manager has been customized to look like and behave like the interface to the browser. And the two are, in fact, actually quite tightly integrated. What you can do is go back to the browser, and you can see the files you've got downloaded on your computer as well, so that there are two ways to get to your content on your computer. If you're already in the browser, you can go to it that way, or if you want to just click the download application down there on the system tray, you can get to it that way too. Now, This the download service should be publicly available soon, but you can already see the media player in action at the ABC shop online. We've got that available so that you can preview DVD clips at the moment. So I'd encourage you to go there and check that out. Thank you.
Isn't that awesome? Like, total integration with the desktop, a whole bunch of cool stuff. If you want to learn all about how that was done, Hiro built that, and the boys from Hiro are here today. They've got a session a little bit later on today to talk about how they built that entire experience from end to end, and to talk to you about their experiences in doing it, the good and the bad. Changing gears a little bit, this year is a big year for the Internet Explorer. Let's call it the Internet Explorer. For Microsoft Internet Explorer 8.0. There's a whole bunch of really interesting things that happen around IE that you probably all, if you're building web stuff, need to be aware of. I'm going to go through them very briefly, but you can have a play and download the developer preview of IE 8, which is purely in developer preview mode at the moment, by going to that URL. But some of the high-level things that are happening in IE 8 is the add-on experience. If anyone's written add-ons for IE or downloaded add-ons for IE, there are 675,000 different ways that add-ons happen in IE. That's all being brought into one UI and one experience. So the add-on experience is being improved. There's a whole bunch of security features that are happening. So color, you know, the color bar at the top being red if there's a missing certificate, or even basic things like highlighting of the domain that you're on. So another defense against phishing. So there's a whole bunch of UI kind of security stuff happening. More crash resistance. So if a crash happens in a tab for whatever reason, the entire browser doesn't die. And if the entire browser does die, it is aware of the tabs that crashed and the tabs that didn't crash, so when it restarts, it'll restart with the tabs that didn't crash. ActiveX experience is much cleaner as well. You can now have security certificates for ActiveX controls at a site level as well. So if you don't want people to be able to access the same ActiveX controls across sites. Probably the biggest thing for developers anyway is around CSS 2.1 compliance. So one of the high-level goals of the IE8 project is pure 100% compliance with CSS 2.1. There is a session, again, around IE8 Damien, I almost called you Cameron, dude. Damien and Lachlan Hardy are going to talk about all of this stuff in detail, especially around how to prepare yourself for CSS 2.1 compliance, because as you know today, in IE7 it's not 100% compliant, so you are probably hacking around it trying to make that work. Because in 8, standards mode is default. So if you built a site today that works in 7 by a whole bunch of hackery, then it's going to break in 8 unless you do one or two simple, very, very simple things to make sure that it doesn't break in 8. There are a couple of other really cool things that extend the reach of your site throughout IE. They are activities and web slices. I won't talk to you about activities and web slices. The boys will talk about it later today. But even better than that, we've got activities and web slices being built today, even on the developer preview. So let me introduce Mark Cohen, who's the technical director of Classifieds out at Fairfax Digital. They've started preparing for IE8, so Mark's going to talk to you about the activities and web slices that they've built and what they look like and what they're all about, as well as what they've done to prepare for IE8. So Mark Cohen.
Fairfax Digital operates what is probably the biggest network of websites in Australia. We have, within Classifieds, we run Draft Domain and MyCareer, which are really the main flagships within our Classifieds business. The three things that I'm going to talk about quickly are there's a meta tag for compatibility, which is really important. Following on from what Mike was saying, if you work with a lot of websites, especially big things, very important that you prepare and that you know about what IE8 is doing. The second two things are the web slices and activities, which are two of the really cool features. What I'm going to do is jump over to the laptop quickly and actually show you. So, we're up. That is what happened to the worst of our sites when we previewed it in IE8, which I think you'd agree is not a particularly useful experience. So after the guys spent a bit of time working on it, that's what came up. And the thing that's really cool is the amount of effort that it takes to prepare your sites to work in IE8 is, it can be pretty big if you've got CSS-driven websites. There's a lot of workarounds to make the CSS work within all the different browsers. You've got workarounds for, you know, Firefox, IE7, all the different things. As soon as you go CSS compliant, those things can backfire. So that line that's highlighted there, that's the compatibility tag. And what that does is it tells IE8, treat the site as IE7. Really good change management. That way you can do a comprehensive review of your CSS and you're not forced into this mad rush of going through hundreds of thousands of CSS files. One line of code and it fixed the thing outright. Now, the two other things I want to show you very quickly are, we've got a lot of people who use Drive in particular who are here for not just the classifieds but the editorial content, which is really a point of difference. The problem with content like this is that it's accessible on the homepage, but people don't necessarily know when something new happens. So if I put the mouse over this clip here, you'll see the little purple icon appearing up top. That icon is the web slice. So if you click on that, it asks you, well, what do you want to do with this thing? Here you go, you can add it. As I add it, you'll see it appear in the toolbar. And it's bolded because I haven't read it. When the content gets changed by our content managers, that will bold itself again. So if someone's not actually on your website, they get alerted, ooh, there's a new feature article in that cover, and they start reading your content. The title changes, you get a quick teaser, you click through, and obviously it's coming back into the article story. The other thing I want to show you really quickly is activities. So what activities are is the IE guys have identified that there's a pattern of behavior where people will look on a web page, find something that's of interest, copy the text, and then do something with it. What they've done with that pattern is they've given us a tool where you can actually say, I want to add an activity to my browser, and that's pretty much the entire install. Really easy to add. And what it does is it gives me the opportunity to go and take a piece of text, right-click it, and say, I want to do something with that. Now, you'll see here that the drive activity is in more activities. If I use it, it will move into the primary menu, the one on the left. But because I haven't used it yet, it's in the more. Now, clicking through runs a search for the text that I just highlighted. And the other thing that's really cool is if you mouse over it and you do the search, what did I just do? You get a preview, and the images come up for the ads that have got images, and you can control what's in there. That's basic HTML that's being pulled back by the activity. You can also take that, the beauty of that is it extends the reach of your search function to any other site. So you can go to another high media website, and you can take the search function, and you can actually extend it beyond the reach of your site. So someone could be reading about a new Toyota on the Toyota website, and have the drive search coming up on the Toyota website effectively. And that's pretty much everything. Thanks very much.
As he runs casually.
Yes, I did sport. There we go. So IE8, heaps of stuff in IE8, more than you probably thought was there. Let's rush along. There's a whole bunch of cool stuff happening around Windows Live. You probably know Windows Live is that fantastic, highly relevant search engine. It is also a developer platform. So if you think about Live, you've got Messenger, there's a whole bunch of, that's probably one of the biggest social networks in the world if you think about it, where you've got this implicit social network with your Messenger contacts. We've done a whole lot of work to expose that stuff out as APIs for developers, and more importantly, those APIs are pure code, so if you wanted to skin them any way you can, you can. So there's a whole bunch of examples around, you know, Silverlight apps, pulling out contacts from contact lists and sending requests and all that sort of stuff. I won't talk a lot about IE. This is Windows Live Developer Platform. So let me bring on Angus Wicked Wicked Logan to talk about Live.
So when I think about what you need to do to run a website, there's a couple of different things. The first is you need to acquire people. And what Mark Cohen just showed you is a pretty neat thing in terms of acquiring people from one web property where you highlight some text and you get a web slice or an activity coming back to the Drive website. That's one option of acquiring people. But really, the biggest cost to a website is, how do you get these people, like how do you get net new visitors that haven't been to your site to come to your website? So what we're seeing a lot of with Windows Live is people wanting to use the relationships that we've built up over 12 years in our contact store. There's about 30 billion relationships. As developers, you guys probably don't get paid for acquiring new people to your web property. But what I'm going to show you is one website that has done this. They're able to tap into the contact store within Windows Live, and they're able to suck new people into their property, so they build on this pre-qualified contact list. The next piece is, once you get these new visitors, once you get more people landing on your page, how do you engage them? And you'll see this with the Silverlight capabilities, you saw this with some of the IE8 things. But imagine being able to turn your entire page into an IM client, for example. Because why do you want to do that? You want more minutes. More minutes means more advertising means more developers, because you get paid that way. So what I want to show you today is just what we've done with the Windows Live platform. Windows Live is our consumer brand. Okay, that is Microsoft's online services for consumers to store, share, and connect with their friends and family. You're probably aware of these top-level services, but there are a lot of different products as well. There's tons of different products under the Windows Live capabilities. So what we're doing is we're wrapping APIs around most of these services. So instead of Microsoft having the relationship with 400 million people every month, we want your organization, your website, to jump in the middle of that equation. We want you to be able to take our services, build capabilities, or build great things for our joint customers and deliver them from your web property. So you get more minutes, you make more money, and we have a great thing, a great experience for our joint user base. So what I'm going to show you is a demo of a website from an Australian startup. The company's called Genexus, and they built this website called the So-So Network. It's basically a business review portal. And just before that, I've got to tell everyone what I'm doing. Doing a demo, just to keep my Twitter up to date. All right, so let's have a look at this So-So Network. So about 4 a.m. this morning, I was in Sydney, because we went out last night, and I went for a great kebab. Somewhere near Paddington, I don't know exactly where it is, and I want to review that kebab place because it was really awesome. So I've signed into this website and I've used Windows Live ID because I don't need to create another identity. But the other reason I've used Windows Live ID is so I get signed on to all of these other Windows Live services. So I'm just going to do the other thing that happened when I signed up to this website, what they've done is they've tapped into all of my Windows Live contacts. So this relationship store of about 30 billion relationships, they've tapped into that, so when I go and write a review on this website, I have relationships, I have friends there that can see those reviews. And they're not only using Windows Live contacts, they're also using Facebook contacts and any other types of contacts. If you run a social website today, you probably want to look at building on top of the relationship stores that have already been developed over some period of time. So I can come in here and I want to do a search for this kebab place. So I think it was in Paddington, Sydney. So I'm just going to do the search for kebabs in Paddington. And we'll see that there's actually... let me just have another look. Paddington, New South Wales. So you'll see that there's a... So you can also hear the kebab palace, but it's actually in Bondi Junction. Now, Paddington is near Bondi, but that's not a direct string match. So what these guys have done when they built the website is they're actually using some of the Virtual Earth web services. So they're calling, they're doing geocoding, and then using SQL 2008, they're doing spatial searches for areas around that specific search target. So it's a really great user experience, because I didn't know that I was actually in Bondi Junction at the time. I can come in here, I can choose to drill into this kebab palace, and have a look at all of the great things that people have written. So we've got some photos here of what the food looks like. I can drop a review in. I can see a map of exactly where it is. If I wanted to get driving directions from the office in Sydney, I could say north, right, and hit show. And this map is coming from Microsoft Virtual Earth. All of the directions are coming from Microsoft Virtual Earth. So the people from So-So don't actually need all of this data. And I can see all of the reviews that were written by everyone, and then using that existing social store, I can see reviews from my friends only, because I really only care about what my friends care about. So I'll just see those results there. Now, one of the other things they've done is they've implemented some video capabilities. So I can watch the kebab maker guy show us how you make a kebab. You get it, you shake it up a little bit, you do the thing to the customers, and then you serve it back to them. So all of these video capabilities, as this website scales, what they've done is they're actually serving the videos from the Microsoft data centers using Silverlight streaming by Windows Live. So they push a video into our data center, and then we serve that back. And right now we're giving people 5 terabytes per month of free bandwidth. Silverlight.live.com. Thank you. Now, I can leave a comment here, I can leave a review, and I'm actually going to skip this, but I want to show you how this site is two-sided. So it's not all just about the consumers leaving comments. If we go back to a different browser, we'll go to Firefox, we'll sign in as the kebab shop owner. Just going to sign in using Windows Live ID again. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to announce a new sale, 50 cent kebabs. I want to tell all of my customers, all of the people that have chosen to follow this shop or follow this business, that there's a sale on. So I'll just choose Kebab Palace here, one of the businesses that I own. And down the bottom, there's one of these, there's an alerting system. Using Windows Live Alerts, which is a multi-channel alerting system. In the US, we do SMS. Outside of the US, we do Toast in Windows Live Messenger, and we do email. We are looking at doing SMS outside the US later. But I can just say 50 cent kebabs, and I'll broadcast that to everyone that's chosen to get alerts from this website. And then shortly it'll pop up on everyone's Windows Live message client. So this is just a different way to acquire people back into the website. Now the other capabilities that I have is if I click on someone that's left a review, and we just see that alert has come through, and that would take me back to the site. If I click on someone that's already left a review, then I can go to their profile page and I can see all of the information that they've left there, all of the news feed that they've done. But what I can also do is see their presence. I can see that they're online right now and I should send them an IM. So now when I'm looking at this website, the SoSo Network, it's actually allowing me to build real-time connections with other people. So this is the engagement site. I'm stuck on the webpage. I'm there just burning minutes, sucking up the ads and making more money for this website. So what I've shown you is how the SoSo Network were able to acquire new visitors to their website through the contact store that we have in Windows Live. They're able to build out those relationships and then acquire, like, repeat visitors back to their site, build deeper engagement. So now they're able to have a real great website and they're able to really bootstrap their organization. So with that, I want to hand back to Shane Moe because he's going to talk about design and stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Angus. I guess as a user experience guy, what really stands out to me about what Angus was just talking about is he's talking about the Windows Live platform, not the Windows Live products. And this idea of leveraging services and platforms for you guys to create your own unique experience, your own unique vision. And Microsoft, we're using this term, differentiated user experiences, and we saw that with SoSo Network. Taking a set of services that are available to everyone, but leveraging it in a unique way that gives them a unique offering. And really, when we look at the future of user experience, we can see a clear trend that consumers are looking for two-way conversations with their content providers, rather than just a passive experience. And so I can't think of a brand that's embraced that two-way conversation with its audience more than Big Brother. And you guys know by now that the live video stream to the public in Big Brother is delivered over Silverlight, Big Brother in Australia. We're really excited about that. It's been awesome. But there's more. And so I'm going to get Richard Lord, who's CMO at Hiro, to come up and tell you really about what those guys are doing to create the next level of experience inside Big Brother, to create a more differentiated, more engaging, and a stickier user experience. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks very much, everybody, and it's a real privilege to be here on behalf of the wizards and talented people at Hiro to show you some of the great stuff they're doing. And it's certainly a pleasure to have two of the projects that we've been working on profiled here in the keynote. Again, you're going to see something now that isn't out in the public domain, so please make sure you all sign your NDAs before you leave. But it's an important innovation, and I guess it's very indicative of some of the change in user experience and user engagement that we're working on for some of our clients. Let me just call it up for you. So Shamo said, this year is our third year working for a Big Brother in a row, and we constantly look for ways to help them improve the experience and the engagement with their customers. As Shamo said, we've chosen Silverlight to broadcast the live video streams on the website, and for a number of reasons. Of course, it gives us better video quality. Things like the adaptive broadband streaming is pretty important, and also the fact that it's a very flexible environment. It means that we can do things like change the form factor of the video player. We can neatly embed the video player inside the web page, and of course we can start to build the controls into the console that we're presenting. But there's more. In the version of the live stream player that you'll see in the next week or two, we've actually been able to take that video player and do a lot with it. What we've done with this video player is we've actually built a programmable layer around the video stream and started to embed some real-life engagement functionality into that player. What you'll see there is that we've actually got the video player pulling real-time data streams from the website. One of the engagement models that Big Brother 08 and Channel 10 use for Big Brother is to allow their audience, and it's quite a substantial audience, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, to post their thoughts, their comments, their rants and their raves through a number of different access point methods. By using Silverlight, we've actually been able to take that engagement and embed it in the video experience. No longer do we have the video in a box in the corner and the engagement forms and the forms that they use to put their rants and raves up sitting separately on a web page. All of it is embedded into a single immersive experience. Inside the player, we can do a lot of functionality. For example, we can draw information live from the website, live from the database that tells us about who the people are. We can find out about their bio, we can allow to see the very, very latest rants and raves as they get posted. We've got a lot of control over this presentation. We can build a lot of functionality, we can make it easy to use, we can make it so that the users find it comfortable and flexible. We can do things like program advertising into this schedule. So because this is a programmable layer, we can start to do stuff like put customized targeted advertising and embed it into the video stream. Because it's a database-driven application, because it's a programmable layer that is part of the video stream, we can do conditional advertising that targets the advertising to the people who are looking at that video stream. It's pretty powerful, and it's pretty flexible, and I think this stuff's going to change the world. If you haven't got your head around Silverlight, if you haven't got your head around programmable rich media, I suggest that you start reading up. Because I really do believe this is the next big thing in the digital world. Thanks very much for your time.
Awesome example of how to take your existing assets, your existing content, mix it up, mash it up, and leverage new value out of the stuff you're already doing, in this case, the rants and raves, the video stream, are already there. So, great example of a differentiated user experience. With the remaining time, I want to talk a little bit about the tools that we're providing to you guys for creating those user experiences. So we've heard about platforms, we've heard about services. Let's talk a little bit about tools. Microsoft's vision going forward is to provide you guys with a consistent set of tools and a consistent set of skills so you can translate your experience and your skill up and down device options and across different platforms. So using the same development skills and the same design skills, whether you're delivering for mobile, for the desktop, for the television, and beyond. A key part of that strategy is recognising the need for collaboration between creative and technical input, and recognising that designers and developers work differently. They don't just dress differently. So, as you guys probably know, this is all about our two studio sets. Visual Studio is the development tool that you guys know and love, and Expression Studio is our suite of tools for designers and creators. And the most important thing about these two tools is the way they interoperate so that designers and developers can collaborate more efficiently and more effectively. So we're very excited to announce for Remix the Australian availability of Expression Studio 2. And you guys are all getting a free copy of that today. And we'd really like to thank the product team for making that possible. You guys are in fact amongst the first people in the world to actually have a physical copy of Expression Studio 2. And there's some stuff in your bags about Expression Studio and the new features. I'm just going to highlight a couple of them. In case you don't know, there's five product
products in Expression Studio. Expression Web is the web design tool, and Web 2 now supports natively supports Photoshop and is true to Photoshop layers, including when you re-import. Web 2 now has drag and drop support for Silverlight and Flash content, and Web 2 also supports PHP now, whatever that is. Expression Design also has awesome new features for layer support, as well as some crazy slicing tools that allow you to generate your comps and then export your comps in a variety of formats, including Silverlight and pings and all the stuff you need to get going with your design work. Expression Blend 2 has new animation features, as well as productivity enhancements in the UI, and of course Silverlight support. Expression Media supports new formats like RAW. It also supports geotagging of your content and has new features for shared catalogs between designers. So your Mac designers and your Windows designers, for example, can collaborate on the same catalog without stress. And lastly, Expression Encoder has new editing features. It now supports live encoding, and it also supports direct publishing of your media to the web through Silverlight streaming service. So if you want to learn more about Expression Studio 2, we've got some great sessions in the creative track today. The second session today, Tim Aylin's going to do a round-trip tour of Expression Studio. He's then going to drill in the session after that into more about the use of Blend and design specifically. And then Adam and Alistair in the afternoon are going to talk about Expression Web 2. Also, we're announcing the new Expression Professional subscription. So from July, we're introducing a different option for you guys to keep up to date with all our latest design-related tools. So you'll be able to subscribe to our tool set, and in that you get Expression Studio, of course, but you also get a bunch of other Microsoft goodness, including Visio, very important, platforms, Office, and I want to point out that it also includes Parallels for all our designers working on Macs. We're also announcing that Expression is going to be part of the DreamSpark program. So if you haven't heard of DreamSpark, we're making the full Expression Studio suite available to every tertiary student in Australia for free from September onwards, as well as a whole bunch of other Microsoft tools that we're making free to every tertiary student in the country. So I reckon I'm done.
All right. Not enough product, Shane. Let's wrap up the keynote a little bit, kids. Hopefully there's a good view of the stuff that we think is important next year. The way I see it is we showed you the wow, and now, you ready? It's time for the how. So the rest of today is all very practical, educational kind of sessions about all of this stuff. And before you go on your way down that journey to learn the how, let me bring your tour guide. Fionnuala Crowe, can you come up here and escort these people out?
Yay, Ben.
Morning, Melbourne. It's been a very exciting morning. Have you enjoyed the keynote? My name is Fionnuala Crowe, and I'm the marketing manager for developers and designers at Microsoft. So I bet you didn't know you have your own marketing manager. That's me. Some of you may know me from MSDN Flash or the AusDev blog, or more recently from my Twitter, which is Finulation. So if you want to follow me, you can find me on there. As the guy said, you're very welcome here this morning. This is our second Remix in Melbourne. Last year was a sellout event, and I'm pleased to say this year is too. And I'd like to thank you for loaning us your beautiful town hall for this event. So, as it is a sold-out event, and there are a lot of people here today, I just wanted to give you a few little tips to make this a comfortable day for you and to get the most out of the day. Firstly, we've got two session rooms and two tracks. This is the main hall, bet you never guessed that, and the other room is the supper room up on level 3. So this is level 1, so don't do like I did yesterday, and I kept touching ground and going off down into some basement down there. This is level 1 if you're taking the lift, and then level 3 upstairs, or you can take the stairs. Okay, so we also have given you some delegate bags this morning with lots of hopefully useful information in it. There's one thing in there I want to call out to you, and that's the evaluation form. It's really important for us to understand how you feel about these events and how you feel about Microsoft in general. So please take the time to fill it out, And at the end of the day, if you can hand it back in to us, we'll give you that free copy of Expression Studio 2, which is worth over $1,000. The other thing is we've got a bunch of experts here today, so people speaking in your tracks and those you've seen in the keynote this morning. They've kindly offered to be out in the exposition area today, and they'll be there to answer your questions. There's not a lot of time within the sessions for questions, so you'll always find them down at the Ask the Expert stand. And you'll meet lots of the Microsoft crew there as well. I'll be there as well today, and I really welcome your feedback about this event and other community activities we do throughout the day. Then towards the end of the day, the bit that I've been waiting for, because this is our second remix and finishes off our roadshow, are some drinks, which are just around the corner in a bar called The Long Bar. Look out for it, it's The Long Bar around the corner. Finally, there's some really good friends of ours here today that we want to thank, and they are our sponsors. So year on year, conference after conference, they support us and they help us put on a good show for you. And without them, we couldn't put on these conferences. So I'd like to encourage you to pop by their booths in the room just to your right here today. They all have various offers. I know Gruden are giving away a holiday. I know I need one of those, but pop by there. They've got a competition going. The Redify are giving away a Silverlight 2 course, and they'll draw that at the end of the day in the Lochner, which will be back in this room. Wacom have some beautiful tablets, which they're displaying today, and Rick Holland has kindly donated two of them, and we'll draw the winners for those at the end of the day here on main stage. And also, Melbourne IT have 90 days of free hosting that you can take advantage of. So don't forget to call by them. Not forgetting our virtual earth partner, Geomatic Technologies. I don't know if they're giving away anything, but they're really nice guys, so pop by and say hi to them. So just to close off the keynote, we've got morning tea happening in the back, but do come through the sponsor area and say hi to us, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.